Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You never really know someone until you find out what they've buried. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
The Sandra Birchmore case and the Karen Reed case, they certainly share some similarities, physical similarities on the surface. In Massachusetts, Canton and Stoughton right there next to each other. Some of the same officers from both cases involved. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. And Jennifer, we have listener mail today. And I got this, and I know it's easy to go online and just kind of gather things up and think it's true. I fact-checked this. From what I fact-checked, it seems to be accurate, but I want to get your take on it. A listener saying to you, like, I think there's more connections here than what Jennifer had said on the show. And I'm going to list this off here. The first officer on the scene at John O'Keefe's death was Officer Lank, who said he heard Karen Reed say she hit him, but didn't put it in his report. And the first officer on the scene of the Sandra Birchmore death was Officer Lank, because Sandra was from Stoughton but lived in Canton at this point. The second officer was Kevin Elbert, Brian Elbert's brother. The state trooper who investigated Sandra Birchmore's death was Trooper Fanning, who was Trooper Proctor's boss. Obviously from the Karen Reed trial. Overseeing both of these debacles was a Norfolk County DA's office, and I believe also it's the same medical examiner as well. A lot of similarities there for departments that are being criticized heavily for bad behavior and corruption. What's your reaction to that? I mean, number one, is that all accurate, and what's your reaction?
Well, a couple of things. And first of all, I think it's so legitimate that different people, whether it's online or via mail, are coming forward and saying, listen, there are intersections between the people involved peripherally on both cases.
Sure.
And you would expect that. It's Canton.
Yeah,
it's a teeny police department. Mm-hmm. It happened in Canton. So absolutely were those individuals original respondents in both cases, but they didn't investigate the cases.
Okay.
They did not, they weren't involved in evidence collection. They are the first people that are on the scene. As we know now, Kevin Elbert has been, he has received some punishment, punishment that people are going to scratch their head and say he should have gotten so much more. But should he have gotten so much more? He was punished for actually drinking in his cruiser. And I think his punishment, if I recall, don't hold me to every letter of this, but I believe he is basically, he has to work 5 days without pay or something like that. And I'm sure one of the listeners will look that up and I'll be a little off. But let's just put it this
way. Like
it
that.
Wasn't a huge punishment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's something that has to do with a leave without pay or work without pay situation. So he's been punished basically for drinking in his cruiser, but not for anything he did in the Karen Reed matter or in the Sandra Birchmore matter. Again, he's first on scene, and you can imagine you come into Sandra Birchmore's apartment and you see, you know, Sandra Birchmore, I mean, it's just horrible, hanging there with a ligature from this doorknob. He immediately knows this is way over my pay grade. I'm calling and the state police are going to investigate that. So I think it's important that we understand really the role of Canton police in both scenarios. In both scenarios, they had more of a peripheral role. But let's move on to Farrell, because I think that is a fair point. I don't know if the listener knows this, but the listener was actually part of the arrest team for Matthew. So he was actually invited by the state police to participate in handcuffing him, if you will. I'm not saying he was the one that put on handcuffs, but in the scenario, that told me a lot because the federal authorities, when they ask for help from these different departments, it means because they trust them.
Yeah.
So as an example, when I've been involved in cases and we knew there was police corruption at a particular police force, and I have one specifically in mind, we actually had a RICO case that involved this department where the police department was the actual racketeering enterprise. Okay. And we never invited them on any of our arrests to do with anybody.
Well, I guess, was it a mistake to have him there? I mean, and that would be my question to that. I mean, yeah, yes, he was there, and I guess it, you know, it does convey trust, but it was that an oversight? Was that a mistake? I mean, this is the guy who was overseeing Proctor. And if, you know, authority comes from the top down and to not, I guess, be that unaware of Proctor living the life that he lived, which was pretty blatant, and to I guess, condone that by allowing it, I don't know. I mean, I think that's questionable as well.
Well, so let's look at Farwell. The biggest thing I saw that just was a total head scratcher to me was on his report, he actually refers to Farwell as Matthew, like in the first person.
Uh-huh.
And that always bothered me. It's so unprofessional. And it, to me, alluded to a personal type relationship. Yep. And that always bothered me. I pointed that out. And, you know, but then fast forward to finding out that he was on the arrest team, mm-hmm. you know, that it was a bit of an oxymoron for me.
It is.
Secondly, though, in regard to, his role with Proctor, keep this in mind, what we know about Proctor so far, and he's on leave without pay.
Good.
But not been fired, that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
The last I knew, he's on leave without pay. He was on leave with pay, then it changed to leave without pay. What we have on Proctor right now, Tony, is we have terrible comments toward the subject of what he thought at the time was basically a drunk driving domestic assault against a Boston police officer. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, all the comments about her and, you know, I mean, I won't go into them. You know them. Mm-hmm. The name calling. And who was he discussing this with? His group on his string of high school buddies and his sister. Mm-hmm. He made one comment, only one, to his supervisory ranks that we know about in the public. And again, I think if there were more, you know, Alan Jackson would have displayed that in court because he certainly displayed everything else. Mm-hmm. And that was something like, yeah, I haven't found any nudes yet. Now, I know people want to think that police officers are choir boys, but that's not the case. Sure. Look at the interview that we talked about previously, or anybody who watched that. Cops cuss.
Mm-hmm. Of
course. Cops get angry. You know, the police officer that interviewed Jen Soto, mm-hmm. he's mad because now he's spent day after day after day. And guess who he hasn't seen? His own kids, mm-hmm. his own wife. He's missing sporting events, right? Yeah. So they're human.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to make excuses for Proctor. And I know I'm going to be blown up about this, but people are human. He was human. And I think he was really pissed that there's a dead fellow officer, because anybody who's been in the police, I don't care whether you're Boston or you're Canton or your state, there is a blue bond and camaraderie. And when one of a fellow officer is murdered, it's upsetting. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, he definitely, you could see his bias and his anger, which I'm not saying was appropriate. It's completely inappropriate, but we don't know anything more than that. What we do know is based on over 3,000 pages of federal reporting from the grand jury investigation that nothing came out about him hiding evidence. Mm-hmm. Nothing came out about him creating evidence, nothing about him hiding, you know, microscopic fibers in John O'Keefe's shirt. Nothing about him planting pale light pieces in the front of Fairview. Nothing, zero goose egg on him being complicit in some sort of conspiracy.
Sure.
And if it would have been there, Alan Jackson would have said that.
Yeah.
In addition, the federal authorities would have not allowed a case to go forward where they knew the individual being charged wasn't the perpetrator of the crime. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. So it's absolutely ridiculous to say that because Kevin Albert was on scene, because he's one of the few Canton police officers, right? Yeah. So of course he's going to be on scene. Sure. Somehow is complicit in a huge cover-up on either case.
Well, and I know that they weren't the investigators on this, but they were some of the first on the scene. And this was ruled a suicide pretty damn quick and clearly was not a suicide. Mm-hmm. And they knew that there was a relationship going on there between Matthew and Sandra. So to walk away from that knowing, oh, it's being ruled a suicide and you're one of the first there, and you know it's probably not, and you know that they have this relationship going on, I mean, one would think, hey, maybe we should look at this further. Maybe there's something I should say about this, but everybody seemed to stay silent because it took a while for this to be ruled a murder. For a while, it just sat there as the suicide and nobody said or nobody knew anything better. I tend to believe they did know better, but nobody wanted to speak out because there was some sort of protection going on here for Matthew. And I don't know why. Maybe they didn't. I don't know if they wouldn't have any idea. That him and his brother were involved with this explorer girl for all of those years. Why would you be protecting a child predator? Why would you be protecting someone who very suspiciously looks like they would be involved in this? That's where I have issue with it. I'm not saying that there was necessarily a conspiracy and investigation. It just wasn't much of an investigation until finally there was, but it wasn't them that did it because they really didn't raise enough flags to cause there to be an investigation.
Well, Tony, if you look, first of all, obviously two totally different departments, right? Sure. So you yep. have Canton and then you have Stoughton. So the interaction between Stoughton and Canton, I don't know what relationships there were, but I can tell you in a scene like this, this is something that they would not have done, meaning Kevin Albert and the first Canton cops on scene would not have done much. And to come in on a scene like that, they just didn't have, I don't think, enough to know one way or the other. And to me, the main reason this investigation went so badly was because of the medical examiner, period, end of story. She's the one that ruled a suicide. And when you have a medical examiner make a determination like that, you are swimming upstream. In fact, you're not going to be able to get a prosecutor to say it's a homicide when your ME has said it's a suicide. Mm-hmm. So you're swimming upstream. The reason that the FBI was able to change the whole directive of this investigation is because they had a secondary autopsy done, or I should say review of the autopsy and the situation. Mm-hmm. And that a very renowned ME said, whoa, I think this is a homicide. So that was the number one thing the FBI needed to determine. Is it truly a suicide? And I believe these agents, they have no dog in the fight.
Yeah.
They're looking at it and they're just saying, listen, I need a second set of eyes on this. Tell us what you see. Mm-hmm. And when they came back and got that determination, then that's when you really have the backing medically to look at all the other circumstances. And this was really a no-brainer if you look at it, right? I mean, she was doing the laundry. Uh-huh. She was excited about being pregnant, the baby shower, the photographs, him walking in there looking like, a guy who never wore a mask during COVID has a mask on. Uh-huh. I mean, it smelled to high heaven. I'm so glad that case has been charged.
Is this, because conspiracy can look a lot like incompetence and vice versa. Is this just a really incompetent medical examiner we're talking about here that ruled it this way, or was there some incentive to rule it one way? I mean, I guess that's the question. Was there something that happened? I don't know the answer to that yet, but what do you think about that?
Well, I think we've discussed in different cases about these medical examiners, and you know, just like everything, there's some amazing, competent medical examiners that take their job very seriously. Unfortunately, my interaction with medical examiners has not been that.
Yeah.
And to watch the medical examiner that was involved in the Karen Reed case, and I did not know they're the same medical examiner, and I would like to know how the listener knows that. Maybe that's come out and I just haven't seen it yet, because we haven't seen the autopsy report of the original medical examiner.
Yeah.
If it's out there, I haven't seen it.
Sure.
I haven't seen that it was released. But if it's that same medical examiner, I have seldom seen a worse medical examiner from the standpoint of you could have said aliens came down and killed Karen Reed. And she would have said, you know, that could be possible. Car could have hit her. You know, a dog could have bit her. She had basically, she made no determinations from the medical mm-hmm. evidence that was available to her. And they're also allowed to use information from the scene, such as the shirt that had the microscopic pieces of taillight embedded in it. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to consider all of that.
Yeah.
She was just terrible on the stand. That's my opinion.
Let me ask you this, off of the subject of the connections and all of that, but onto the case itself. Matthew Farwell, of course, someone that's been charged, William Farwell, his twin brother, also accused of having inappropriate relationships with Sandra Birchmore. He is still free. The brother, William, is free. I know he stepped down, and you could probably say this better, but he's now in with a database where you can't be rehired as a police officer. And so he's taken that off of his list of anything he can do. Why no charges there yet on the brother if he too was involved with Sandra Birchmore?
Well, was he involved with Sandra Birchmore when she reached the age of consent?
Okay.
If it was after the age of consent, I don't think they have a case unless sure. they can prove he was involved in the cover-up and harboring and anything mm-hmm. to do with the murder, which I'm sure they are looking and digging. And I think they're finding, you know, you don't, if you're totally innocent, you don't decide to denounce your ability to ever become an officer when that's all you've done.
Yeah.
So they're digging and they're making some headway. We're going to see if there are charges, but they have everything she said too.
Yeah.
So if she talked about that relationship and whatever interaction they had and it seemed to be consenting, I think that they're going to have trouble making a case. What I want to know is, and I'm sure they're looking, he have any role, his twin brother, did he have any role in anything to do with this, with her murder?
Yeah. It's bizarre. It's dark. It's twisted. And there's so many questions. I think that still need to be answered. And hopefully we'll get
Tony,
to that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I was just going to say, this is why, and I totally understand it. I've drawn this analogy. I don't know if you agree with me that if you look at the OJ trial, mm-hmm. and the race situation that existed with Rodney King and how inflamed jurors and the public were in terms of how they were being treated by police. Mm-hmm. OJ's innocent or not guilty verdict was a direct correlation. The jurors have said that. They're on tape saying that that's why they did it. Mm-hmm. So now, in my opinion, you know, so that was jury nullification. Now, in this case, you have a, you know, people in Massachusetts that are fed up with public corruption, mm-hmm. that always believed that something nefarious happened in the case of Sandra Birchmore,
yeah.
and many other cases. And, yeah. you know, so you're seeing the same situation. They're so fed up with one situation, but that does not mean that the facts correlate to Karen Reed.
No.
I've always said, yeah. you guys are barking up the wrong tree. Go to the Sandra Birchmore tree. Stay away from the Karen Reed tree.
Yeah,
that's not the tree to bark up.
They're different trees. It just feels, it's a culture thing, I think, of corruption. And that's where the concern is. I think that's where I think a lot of people come from. Not that the two cases are truly connected in any way, other than just some of the players that may mm-hmm. have some corruption are the same players, and we've basically have two examples of corruption that shows us a trend of behavior, and these are just the big cases that we know about. I mean, the public issue with everything stems probably far more from just smaller things that we don't hear about and we don't know about, and then when something big like this happens and it gets really exposed, then it's a much, you know, larger, you know, totem pole to look at and go, oh my gosh, this is a prime example of all of the things that we've been talking about as a collective, as a community for so long, and the corruption that's been going on.
Well, and to your point, Tony, I can tell you from being involved in public corruption investigations, specifically with the police department and another one with the district attorney's office, two different cities, two different timeframes. They are looking at everything, Tony. They don't just put up walls and say, okay, this is just Sandra Birchmore. We're just going to concentrate here. They are looking at everyone. They are breathing down the necks of everyone in the state police. And anything that they could possibly find, they are going after. That's what their mission is. There's a public corruption squad that exists. So people might not understand that, but in the Bureau, there's actual squads, and those agents have very specific duties, and there is going to be, there is one, a public corruption squad, and that's what they do. And that's all they know. Good. I shouldn't say all they know. They could have been on another squad in another office. Yeah. That's what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And that, so they're not going to put up a wall and say, okay, we end here. They're going to want to see all the spider webs, and they're going to want to figure out anybody who's corrupt. And I think we'll see more heads roll.
Yeah. Well, good. I mean, that community deserves a police force they can trust, and that is on the up and up. And hopefully they're able to get it after going through the storm that they're going through right now.
I agree, Tony. And I want to say one more thing really quick. There is nothing that makes a truly, you know, a moral police officer, a police officer or FBI agent, anybody else, more angry than the guys wearing the badge in the blue that are corrupt, like a Matthew Farwell. Mm-hmm. It boils one's blood because it's reflection on you and what you got in the community to do, in you know, in law enforcement to do. So believe me, there is a lot of passion and anger from police personnel at Farwell's, far more, I think, than any community member can even understand, because it makes you so mad.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
So they said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tompanda products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.